Hey, and here we are again. We're back.
Are
you on the line with us?
Yes, I am. Barely. I've been cut off a few times.
Yeah, that's okay.
You're
back on now, and you're back on. So here we go.
Fantastic.
Part two of the show. We had a little technical difficulty, but we're back on the air. So we want to pick up the conversation. We're talking about Prince. You talked about Michael. I think you were talking about you weren't as familiar with Prince as you were with Michael. Is that correct?
Yeah. And let me give you some backdrop on that. Obviously, because of my time working at, music radio at WBLS, and during that heyday period, our late program director, Frankie Crocker, knew everybody and knew the Jacksons very well. And, you know, there was a period of time when Michael Jackson, you know, very much in his youth, nowhere near where he wound up as being the giant that he was, but in the embryonic stages, he would go out, he'd come in on what we used to call record day, and they would, you know, the PD, Frankie Crocker, would play his music, and there were times when you know, they'll do interviews, and Michael was so gracious, he would go out and run and get coffee for the DJs and the news people who were on the air. And so for some reason, you know, there was an identity situation with him. Prince, I recognized his talent, but for some reason it was just a little too bizarre. I mean, when Michael started turning strange, I mean, and I don't mean that in a despicable way, you know, but it's just that there was a period of time in which the innocence of Michael Jackson was just removed from his personality from what we saw in the Four, you know, unless you knew him intimately. And even at that, there were some issues, you know, with respect to that. Prince also went through the same period where he just shut down. I remember when they used to refer to him as the person formerly known as Prince, you know. I think that stemmed something from some record contract problem.
That was a dispute with the record company where he could no longer, you know, be referred to as Prince.
Right.
And that was when he had the dispute with the record company, so people called him the artist formerly known as Prince. That's when he started to have the symbol, and he was wearing slave on his face. And that's what that was.
Yeah, yeah. I think that was great that he was that gifted to know how to challenge the system and still come out on top, you know?
What kind of problem was he having? I don't understand that.
I don't remember. Eric?
Yeah.
I defer to Eric on that one. I don't remember.
Earlier, the problem he was having was with his record company. He wanted to release more songs, wanted more freedom to control his name and his product.
Yeah.
That's the problem he was having. And actually, he was one of the first artists to really take advantage of doing releasing your music on the internet, because no one had really kind of worked out a way to do that. Prince was really the first one.
Right.
Now you have the title, you have all these artists now releasing their music on the internet and having direct access, making direct sales themselves to their public. And because of the technology, it's so easy to do now, to download. And so Prince was one of the first ones to explore that and to be quite successful with it. Also, too, if you watched, my mother and I were talking about the other night, we were talking about Van Jones on CNN, who Prince had contacted after he lost his job at the White House, and Prince wanted him to find organizations and charitable organizations and causes that were good, and Prince would help him fund those organizations. So a lot of the things that Prince was doing, a lot of people didn't know about because he was a Jehovah's Witness.
Yeah.
A lot of people that he was, Van Jones said specifically, he said, I'm going to say it now. He said, there are people in Oakland that have solar panels on their homes or using solar energy that will never know that Prince was the one who paid for their homes to be retrofitted with solar energy.
Wow.
Solar panels. And there were things that he was trying to do in Chicago to quell the violence. And he said that, you know, a lot of times Prince did these shows in these areas. These shows were a means of cover, so he could come there and talk to community groups about how he could best help them. He said that Prince gave a show in Chicago, and he wanted to meet with all of the people that were community group activists. He didn't want to meet with any vendors. He wasn't there to help people make money. He was there to help the community. So a lot of this stuff that Prince was doing, nobody knew about. So that just goes to show you how far and how much aware that he was. And, you know, these last 15, 20 years, Prince, like I said, Prince started being a little bit more open with the press, doing interviews, and people started to got to know him a little bit more than just being that kind of strange guy that he was when he first came out. He also started Yes We Code. He was instrumental in starting Yes We Code, which was the move to teach a lot of the young minority kids how to write computer codes and to get involved in the developing and developing of computer programs, math applications, and to promote that for minority children to be able to get, you know, because that's the wave of the future. So Prince was quite a humanitarian. Quite as helping his people. So that was impressive.
Yeah, it's so great to hear and understand that an artist of his caliber, you know, was giving back to the community. A lot of people don't even know that. I know I didn't know a lot of that, you know, because I really, you know, Michael Jackson was there and, you know, everybody was centered on Michael Jackson. I was one of them. And Prince, I knew about Purple Rain and I knew about a number of things that he was singing, but I had no idea that he was creating so much music and doing it constantly. And when they say that he has quite a portfolio of music a lot of it hasn't even been let out to the public yet, I would imagine. So I think this story is going to be going on and on about Prince. But I want to give out the number again for those people who want to call in. And the number is 323-679-0906, 323-679-0906. So let's try and see if people, somebody, if you want to call in to say something about Prince, okay?
Go ahead, Wayne, you were saying?
The only thing is that, as you mentioned, some of the things that he was doing philanthropically, I'm reminded that at the height of last summer, when we were having all those disturbances down in the Baltimore, Maryland area, he gave an impromptu concert. And I never, you know, for some reason that just resonated with me, because the thing is that you didn't think somebody like him would come out, and clearly was an effort to quell a lot of the tension that was going on there. And
well, that was
it wasn't,
that
it
was
wasn't something he was
that,
paid
that
for.
That was the reason he gave the concert. That was the reason he gave the concert.
Right, right, you know. So it just showed, and I remember the last appearance he made in the last Grammy Award ceremony. You know, he came out, and the first thing that he said out of his mouth, Black Lives Matter. You know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, clearly he identified with all that was going on. And, you know, he didn't stand on the soapbox or beat a drum. He wasn't, with all due respect to Reverend Al and people like that. The deal is he had his own way of getting the message across and trying to get people to come together and stop the violence.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's what I think that's good that's coming out, that people can know about. And because obviously the news is going to come out and prescription drugs and whether he was using them for painkillers or whatever, nobody could say that Prince was using them to get high. I've never heard that in conjunction with him.
No.
And so, I mean, it's good that people know all the good work that he did outside of the music.
But Wayne, also now you were the news director over there at WLIB-BLS. Now, how much attention was given to Prince over there on the BLS side?
Well, to be honest with you, I can't recall any moment that was significant that stands out.
Yeah.
You know, when I compare, you know, the lifestyle of Michael Jackson, there was always a story about Michael, you know, whether it was an issue of you know, alleged pedophilia, his relationships with different superstars, things like that. Of course, same situation that Prince had with the record labels. Michael had a problem with the last time I saw Michael physically, this is after he had gone through the transformation, he had had a significant news conference at the old National Black Action Network up in Harlem with Sharpton, and the deal is that he was really trouncing on Tommy Mottola about something that he had done that basically he was not going to be a part of, and he just put his career on the line as a result to take a stand about that. So it seems like there's a parallel between both artists, and I don't know if they ever collaborated on anything, but it's just that there's a certain genius about both of them that just seems to be so you know, pronounced. I mean, and I don't know if it's. I mean, when you look at their, when you analyze both personalities, the things that they've gone through. I mean, the similar struggles. I mean, Michael had his own way of dealing with consciousness, but not on the same level as Prince did, you know? But they both had prolific minds, wrote, you know, great, and a lot of the material that, Jackson left has not been, you know, I don't think it's been fully been released, you know? And I know the last interview I saw of Prince during the height of the crisis this past week, and then he himself said that he may never live long enough to release all the things that he's recorded, you know, which I thought was a little telltale sign, you know, that, you know, like he knew something was winding up within him. And then, and I just found out that earlier this year, the performer Vanity, who was his girlfriend, she died in January at the same age of 57. And, you know, so I find it strange. I don't know. A lot of people talk about the relationship with Sheila E., but there was a significant relationship with this artist, Vanity, who he also discovered, a pretty girl. And it's unfortunate what happened to her. She admitted that her days of drugging and getting high and all that stuff, in his company, mind you, led to her downfall with respect to her.
Let me correct you on that. I don't know. I've heard different. I don't know whether it was if she said. I don't know. Maybe you're commenting that she might have said in his company.
It was written. It was on the internet. A couple of. At least I'm not saying that everything is gospel on the internet, but I did remember because I was struck by the fact that a relative of mine told me that, you know, did you know that Vanity died? And I said no. And I said, are you sure it's her? And he said, yeah. And there was an attribution to the fact that she was doing a lot of drugs. And apparently it was around the time that 20, 30 years ago. Now, Prince cleaned himself up, but they both engaged in this behavior.
Yeah.
From what I heard.
That's what you heard. I heard just the opposite. And everybody that I know I heard Van Jones said he never seen Prince high or use drugs. And I don't know for a fact, but I know some other
early
people.
Early on in his career?
Well, I'm just saying what Van Jones said on CNN the other day, that Prince didn't get high. And I've heard that from a couple of other people. One of the things that caused him and Vanity not to be together because she was getting high. But I kind of think that if that was the case, that we might have heard about that.
Yeah.
I mean, if these rock and roll guys or these music people that getting high and doing the thing, certainly they didn't have any problem letting us know about anybody else. So I think that he probably, you know, I just hesitate to say that about people unless you know it for a fact. So, I mean, some of the things that have been coming out in the news about him were kind of the opposite, but you know, you never know. I mean, he did have the prescription drugs. That's what they said on the nightly news tonight, that were with him when he was found. So maybe he got to the point where he was abusing. They say that some of the prescription painkillers can become addictive to people. So maybe that was the case. But up until that point, I had never, you know, a lot of times people assume that people in the industry, certainly, like I said, music people, certainly they're getting offered all kinds of things. So a lot of times people assume that those people are often using drugs and abusing drugs. And sometimes it's not the case. So you want to say that.
I'm not looking to cast aspersions on him.
Yeah. Wait a minute.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Can the two of you look at Michael Jackson and at Prince, and can you see any similarities? Or anything that is, you know, it seems to be a certain vein that they both have, or a road that they both have gone on or something? Were they involved with their people who were representing them to the point where they just let them do things for them and they didn't understand that they were getting into a problem? Or what do you think about both of them?
I don't think that Prince.
Go ahead.
I was going to say with Prince, he didn't have other people you know, Michael had a lot of people handle it.
Right.
I think that was the whole thing. The whole thing about Prince was that he was hands-on with his career and things. Obviously, why he left his record company years before Michael had a beef with his company. So, I think in that respect, also Prince. When you look at the image of the two, Prince was the bad boy. Michael was the kind of good guy. Prince came from kind of a broken home. Michael, not necessarily from a broken home. These are the things that were different from them. Or Prince's home wasn't as family life, from what I understand, or from what I've heard in some news stories or some things on the internet, like you were saying, Wayne, that his home life growing up wasn't the best. He has a number of half brothers and sisters. His full blended sister, I guess Tika is the one you're talking about, Mom. But I also saw the news that a number of half brothers and sisters might be in line with the will to receive something. And I think the similarities, obviously, is their genius and the ability to do things. So, however, Prince played 27 instruments. I know that I've seen him proficiently play the guitar, and I believe the drums and the piano.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've never seen
it. And so, I don't know how many instruments Michael played. I'm sure he played at least one or two, being that he was from a musical family. Those are my similarities and differences that I see. Wayne,
Well, the only thing I can say is that, as I mentioned earlier, I mean, the fact that the two of them died young, two of them went through this metamorphosis of sorts with regard to their wanting to keep a certain amount of their lifestyle under wraps, which is, you know, their want, WONT, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. I think it's commendable that you could be in this, you know, business and try to keep at least a veil of privacy, you know, around you to a certain extent. You know, with regard to people, you know, the hang-ons and people like that, there are people in Prince's life, probably not to the point where they were directing him, but, you know, I just found it, I was really taken aback, and it's only because in recent years and months I've seen a lot of people go, and no one knows when they're dying, but they go and they haven't left the will. You figured somebody of his magnitude, I mean, in terms of financial wealth, would have done something, you know, of that sort, but, you know, I found that interesting, but, you know, the deal is that I'm certain the advisors were there. I mean, he had a relationship with L.A. Reid and other people who would have given him good, sound advice, and and that's that. So, you know.
Well, we will certainly find out more as time goes on. I'm quite sure, you know, we'll find out a lot more information. But, you know, right now, Wayne, we want to switch right over to politics. We want to switch over to every time I think of Donald Trump, I have to laugh because I just don't believe that he is there's a great possibility that he may win the presidency. And I don't even know what would happen if that happened. I have no idea. All I know is this is the biggest, dopiest campaign with this man making believe that he's president. I really think that he probably saw that. Sometimes it's gone too far. I really don't want this. So it's really unreal. So what do you think? Where are we? We have the politics. We have Donald Trump. We have Hillary. Who's going to win? I take Hillary. What do you think?
Well, I'm hoping. You know, I've said this time and again. I think it's coming down to that. But, you know, I was really taken back by the number of successful outcomes Donald Trump had yesterday. And last night, you know, I saw his news conference, and I there's just something, you know, he feels somewhat empowered now. He's still shooting from the hip, but it's almost like as if he feels that he could change the world, you know? And I'm just taken back at his behavior. Even the comment he made about Hillary Clinton and a woman card issue.
Yeah.
You know, right. I mean, they said that, and I saw, you know, Governor Christie and his wife there up front, and, you know, her expression when he said that, you could see that she was bothered by the comment. You know, it just goes to show you can't even go to some presidential event, or not to say that he's president, but just an event like that, and be captured on film, and it could work against you. You know, I mean, the same thing that they said about Christie himself right after he had given him his support, you know, shortly after he dropped out of the contest. But Trump, man, it just amazes me. And I think it's gotten to the point now, I get a lot of emails from the Democratic Party because I give, and sometimes I feel like I wish I could write off what I give, but I can't. And there was one of those robo efforts this afternoon coming directly from the Obama camp saying, we cannot have Donald Trump as president, you know? And, I sat there, and then they said, how much are you willing to give? And I understand that. But, you know, it's almost to the point where, and I don't think he's actually saying these things, that there's somebody in the DNC writing these pledges and scripts. But the bottom line is, it just took me back because I was taken back by Trump's last news conference last night about what he plans to do. And he attempted to look so presidential today with a foreign affairs speech of some sort. You know, I didn't really pay much attention to it. Yeah, he spoke, I think, at the one of those clubs down in D.C. If I'm not mistaken, I don't want to say the White House Press Club. He made an appearance to give an address on his opinion about what he will do to straighten out issues between the United States and the world, you know? And he sort of, you know, he talked about that during his news conference last night, that, you know, he was beating up on Obama because of the relationship between China and the United States, said that he could handle that, he could handle Korea, you know, you need to just get the Chinese involved with the Koreans because, the president of North Korea fears the Chinese. I mean, things that just were coming out of his mouth didn't seem to make a lot of sense to me at all. But in his heart of heart, there are people out there that buy into that nonsense. And that's what I fear.
Well, you go ahead, Ma.
He is a performer now. Okay, he's been performing as the head of The Apprentice, so therefore he can say anything he wants to say, and it's really pathetic because of the fact that so many people believe that he can possibly be the president of the greatest country in the world. And to me, that is absolutely absurd, but it looks like it might happen. And it shouldn't happen because of the fact that he doesn't have a plan. What kind of plan does he have for dealing with Europe? What kind of plan does he have for dealing with the Asian countries? You know, he says things that are so outrageous, there is no plan, no nothing. And it's amazing how people are so involved with him. So, but then again, you know, he is saying things about racial things and a whole lot of negative things that we don't even want to hear about. So he's saying something that's resonating with a certain group of people. And I'm hesitating a little bit to, you know, be so specific. However, I'm quite sure people can really read into what's going on here.
I don't know if I agree that he's going to be president. I agree that there's a lot of people who want him to be president, he seems to have tapped into a feeling. Obviously, there was a greater feeling that a lot of people suspected, that underlying feeling that certain Americans of a certain stripe have, that they were losing their grip on America. They were losing their American dream, so to speak. And a lot of these individuals felt that they weren't on top anymore.
Mm-hmm.
America
exactly.
is not winning anymore. Mm-hmm. And he wants to take America back to the good old days. And whenever somebody starts talking like that, that's when I, you know, think that, you know, this person is talking about the good old days. Next thing coming out their mouth, they're going to be talking states' rights. Well, they've been talking states' rights. And then they're going to be talking Jim Crow and some other
right.
kind of crazy
mm-hmm.
stuff. So I think Donald Trump's appeal to me, to the majority of these people, is that all of these people feel that they're not winning anymore. We've got all of these other people coming into this country, and this other person is president, and we're not on top anymore. And I think there's a certain segment of the American population that is used to America being a certain way,
mm-hmm.
and within the last 20 years, America has been changing, and they're not ready for it. America has been changing the way it changed when the country was first developed, meaning so many different people are now coming into this country that the people who came here initially to so-called settle this country, which is what they like to say, as opposed to really stealing this country, their way of life seems to be threatened now. And that way of life has to be shared with a whole bunch of other people and new Americans. And the very words written on that Constitution, the words that a lot of these people speak, they're going to have to be held to those words,
exactly.
not to the actions. They're going to have to be held to the words that they espouse, and that all men are created equal, not just some men, not just the men in this room that's writing this document with us. They're going to have to be held to their word. And what's happening is a lot of those people don't like being held to those words. And, you know, it amazes me how these people can sit here and listen to a man like Donald Trump who changes his mind 3 times in one day. There was one issue that he changed his mind. He flip-flopped and flopped again 3 separate times. This man's children are not even registered to vote. And people sit up here and listen to this guy as if he's not a liar, as if he's not willing to say anything to get elected. And for the life of me, I'm still amazed at how anyone could sit. I don't care whether you're a Democrat, Republican, if you're my friend or not. I can't sit there and listen to somebody talk about how great they are for any longer than 15 seconds. And I don't know how these people can sit here, sit down and listen to this guy talk about how great he is. He's like the politician comedian, this guy.
Yeah.
He's half stand up, half talking some facts, half some of the stuff he says are very, you know, are on point because they're obvious things to everybody else in America. But then he falls back into it, then he flips into the jokes, then he flips into the racial stuff that gets a lot of these people up. You know, so I don't know how anybody could take this man seriously. And it just proves how much our culture, A, is still very racist, B, worships wealth, and worships celebrity. Because this man was on The Apprentice.
Mm-hmm.
This is the same Donald Trump. When I first heard about him, some 30, 40 years ago, about 35 years ago. This is the same guy who was trying to build casinos in Atlantic City when they were making it legal to gamble and was trying to muscle an old lady out of her house. This same guy who talks all this tough guy stuff couldn't deal with an old lady who didn't want to sell her house just so he could build his casino. So if this is the individual we're talking about that stands up there and acts like he's such a big and bad guy. And when that person, if you think back about a month ago when that person tried to rush the stage he was on, how much he looked around and wanted to run like a little girl, and then this guy turns around and wants to play this whole tough guy thing, well, come on, it's the biggest facade I've ever seen. And I really feel sorry for Republicans who are really truly about the issues, because this man is not about the issues. And he's blown this dog whistle enough. He's attacked Hillary, saying she's playing the woman card. Mm-hmm. Whenever somebody says they're playing that another person is playing a certain card, that pretty much is something that identifies the person or part of their identity. And have the nerve to say, oh, you're going to play that card. You're going to play the woman card. Well, like Hillary said, if that's the card you're going to say I'm playing, then deal me in, because I am playing the woman's card. Because women don't get paid the same amount of money that men get paid in the United
exactly.
States. Women still get a lot of hell by men. Just the fact that he said that, if she was a man, she wouldn't get 5% of the vote. He knows that's a lie. If she was a man, she would probably beat Barack Obama. That's the real of it. But they sit up here and listen to this. This guy's an idiot. If you really listen to him talk, he's not very smart. He's not very educated. He's smart because he's rich. And what happens when you're rich and powerful, you have access to information that not everybody else has access to. That's how you get smart, by knowing stuff that nobody else does, by getting ready, by being able to read those books that nobody else does. That's why we wanted our kids to go to school. That's where busing came from. That's where Brown versus Board of Education came from, because we knew that our that young black kids could get as smart as their counterparts if they had the same opportunities to learn, if they had those same new textbooks, then we could even out the playing field. So, you know, this whole thing is a facade. We got to watch how the news is reported, how all this stuff is reported. Go ahead, Wayne. I'm sorry. I'm getting off on
No, no, I agree with you. I mean, I concur.
Like, we got WLIB happening again.
What happened to Bob Radio, Wayne?
Yeah, well, I concur 1,000%. It does remind me of the old LIB every time we get off the air.
Okay.
You know, there were times when the transmitter would go down and you kind of figured, well, gee, maybe they don't want us to know this information and stuff like that. But it's true. You know,
hey,
I mean, it's
that,
sad.
Bro. There might be a lot
you know.
Of truth in that.
Yeah, I mean, really. I
oh,
mean,
wait, listen,
there
listen,
were times, you know, you're in the middle of a news cast or a talk show, and you get into a point where it's critical for somebody to hear what's going on, and then all of a sudden, oh, the transmitter's down, you know? And let's go find Bill Thorpe or Jim Wiener or somebody to see if they can get us back up, you know? God bless them both. I know Thorpe is retired. I don't know about Jim. But the bottom line is that it amazes me how people will do anything to stifle information. But I am reminded at one point during that news conference last night, he did talk about how smart he was, you know, or
was
he
that?
Is. Or he thinks, Trump. I couldn't believe that this,
oh, back
you know.
To him?
No, this was last night. This is after the win, you know, his so-called historic five-state win. And, you know, and again, he engages in what we used to call back in the day, in the vernacular of the people, the dozens. And I'm not saying that there aren't certain issues that he can beat up on Hillary Clinton. I think fair game on NAFTA, fair game on her husband's illicit activities with women and things of that sort, you know. But I think they anticipate that, and I think that Hillary Clinton is a great debater. I think it's stupid that they're engaged in this sophomoric behavior about the emails and what went on, you know, in Syria. You know, the time that we lost the Deputy Secretary General there and involved in the bombing. I mean, it just saddens me to think that, you know, he could just come up with these hot-button subjects that he feels will fuel a certain agenda in the eyes and resonate in the eyes and ears of people who are not aware. But the Republican Party has been for a long time banking on that. That's why they engaged in this investigation, wasting our federal tax dollars, sitting up there having hearings about something. And, you know, and he keeps referring about how the phone rang at 3 o'clock and she didn't get out of bed to answer the call. I mean, please, you know, what is he, some sort of insomniac? You know, I mean, if juxtaposed with the same set of circumstances, you know, I am certain that he would use his own emails. You know, he just strikes me as that kind of person. I'm the king, and I'm above, you know, any rules or regulations because I'm Donald Trump. We don't need that. We don't need it.
But I'll tell you one thing, you know, he's there. We're going to have to deal with him. He just may really become the president of the United States. And I don't know what's going to happen if that happens, because that I can't think of anything worse right now.
Well, I'm going to renew my citizenship to Trinidad.
What program does he have? What kind of philosophy does he have? What does he know about running a country? You know, he knows about what he knows is being rich. That's wonderful. Wonderful for him. But what does he know about really running a country? And that is, and that's the bottom line. But
he just lacks social skills. I mean, it just saddens me.
Raises everything, social skills. Yeah. What is that?
He's like
he doesn't understand that.
They say back in the day that kings, certain kings and very rich people really lacked a lot of social skills and etiquette. And some were even weren't as educated as they were. That's why they had their wizards and people to tell them stuff. So I wouldn't be surprised that you know, it's like George Bush, you know, you got that famous clip of W speaking somewhere, and he's talking about, you know, there's this old saying, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, fool me twice mean you can't be fooled again. So you know, he couldn't even recall the saying. So
exactly.
You know, now that little bit is a part of a rap tune. The kid with dad put that on a rap song. So I mean, it goes to show you that just because you have wealth, power, station, does not mean that the person's gonna be educated. You know, and we saw that constantly with W as president. I mean, he was able to function. He was nominally intelligent. He had normal, I guess, intelligence. They said his whole thing, he was a C average student. You know, he probably was not trying, so he probably could have been a C plus or B maybe if he had tried. But, you know, it's this whole thing of that people assume, they assume good graces. They assume that person's wealthy. They have the best intentions for everybody else. They assume that patronage that comes along with wealth and station. And you know, it's kind of, you know, some people want to be led. That's why, you know, some people want to be leaders. Some people want to be followers. You see that in society. I mean, certainly, if we watch the contest and watch presidential elections, how certain people are picking their leaders that they want to follow behind, and they get there, they get all crazy and riled up because that's their leader. And I just feel sorry for the Republicans because they have to choose the less of two colossal idiots. The other idiot, Ted Cruz, he comes out and picks a running mate.
Yeah.
Nobody does that. Nobody ever does. Nobody picks a running mate before you get the nomination. You ain't nominated, bud.
And he's
raising
Carly Fiorina.
Why are you picking a running mate? You're not nominated. Just to assume that you're going to get nominated, that you need to do something to get the attention back on you, is idiotic. And you see why an individual like Ted Cruz, I don't know him personally, but he's the most hated guy in the Senate.
No one has even endorsed him, to my knowledge, other than his family.
The Klansman, Jeff Sessions,
Senator
from Alabama. But we expect that because he is a racist. So even though probably would say he's not, we know that he's kind of racist. So, but it's just unbelievable. I mean, they have the lesser of these two jackasses, in my opinion. If you're a Trump or a Cruz person, God bless you. If you're just a regular Republican, God bless you too, because I feel kind of sorry for you. Because it's really...
They're definitely in shambles, not to cut you off. I mean, there's no question about that. This contest, this past year, they didn't think this one out at all. There was no Roger Ailes or Karl Rove in the mix to come up with some machination to undo an Obama, you know? I mean, it's like, you know...
They jammed themselves up with W.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's it.
I'm sorry, I just wanted to say, and we've got to wrap this up, because I just want to spend the last 5 minutes talking about Congressman Donald Payne Jr.'s congressional ball on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the chickens coming home to roost, I would say. Wouldn't you have to say, Wayne? Because this is what they've been spouting, hate. Tea Party movement was all about.
Right.
I mean, it might have been about people feeling they were left out, but the Tea Party really kind of riled up around the end of George Bush's presidency, and Fox really took flight during the George W. Bush presidency as a mouthpiece for the Republican side of things. So when they went from Bush to Obama, and the Tea Party really started getting stronger and stronger, and they started electing idiots like Michelle Bachmann and these other crazy people, and started letting them talk about Obama wasn't a citizen, he's born in Kenya, he's a Muslim. They started that kind of rhetoric, and they allowed it to go, and they also encouraged it in some manners. So Donald Trump comes out, and he wants to do the birther thing and have fun with it, until Barack had to cut him at the correspondence ball and made him look stupid, and then he backed up off of it. You know, but, I mean, this is the thing. So I just want to put a button in that. Real quick, we've got like about 4 minutes and change going on. Sunday evening was the congressional ball, the annual congressional ball here in New Jersey, here in Newark, New Jersey, for Congressman Donald Payne Jr. It's the black tie event that we have once a year. was started by my uncle years ago, continued by his son who has succeeded him in the House of Representatives. We always have a keynote speaker, a great keynote speaker. And this year, the keynote speaker was the number one Democrat in the House of Representatives, Nancy Pelosi. And
Pelosi, wow.
Yeah, she came to town. She did a fantastic job speaking to the crowd. She stopped to see Don Payne Sr.'s statue, which is on display here in Newark, New Jersey, and really gave a really important, and you see why she is a leader, because she gave a very rousing speech to everybody and talked to people about what's really important. And what do you think about that, Margaret?
Oh, it was absolutely wonderful, and she really told us exactly what was happening in Congress and with women. A lot of the congressional men don't have any respect for women in Congress. And they will tell you, and she knows exactly what's been going on, so she was trying to tell us to, you know, guard against that meeting. Come out and vote. Get yourself, if you're not registered to vote, and to vote for the people in Congress that's going to be doing something for your community or for the right way of life, really, we're losing. So, yeah, she was wonderful. I had a nice chat with her, and I really enjoyed her. And she was really, really, she gave a lot of information that, we should have been hearing a long time ago, and we heard that night. So it was a great affair, and it was crowded, and it was downtown Newark, and people enjoyed themselves. And congratulations to those people who, came down there and had a good time.
Right, right. And Congressman Donald Payne Jr., of course, was a very successful event, successful turnout. Most people supported him, as you said. And most of those people that are opposing women's rights are Republicans, let's say that, that she did stress that it wasn't the Democratic men who, Democrats are trying to do the right thing, although probably there are some men that happen to be Democrats that need to be at their attitude adjustment as it comes to women, but at least the Democrats, for the most part, are for women's rights, equal pay, and equal treatment in the workplace and such. And what she gave was a very important point. A lot of people who were saying about D.C. Congress not working together and people ought to come together and work. And she said, you can't come together and work with people who don't want to work with you. She said their objective was, when Barack Obama got elected, was to stop everything he's trying to do. So people
exactly.
take that approach. You can't work with people like
mm-hmm.
that. So. It was very encouraging words from Nancy Pelosi. She's pro Hillary Clinton. Didn't have anything against Bernie Sanders, but that was her pitch. So we're up on 90 seconds. Wayne, do you have any closing thoughts?
Sorry I missed the event. Next time I'll have to see about getting a black suit to make it a point to be there, But it sounded like as if it was a very good event, and I'm sorry
great.
I missed it, but, I look forward to next year.
Right.
And it was a very great event. We just wanted to say that coming up on the end of the show, you can listen to the Kay Thompson Show every Wednesday live, 8 to 9 p.m. At blogtalkradio.com/KayThompsonLive. You can also listen to any episode of the show you want anytime because the show is archived. So that means you don't have to wait for the live show if you don't want to. If it looks at your schedule, you can listen to the show at any time you want. So we hope you listen to us again next Wednesday at 8 p.m., 8 to 9 p.m. I am also known as the Sun, Eric Payne. Mr. Gilman, you are.
I am who I am, and I'm glad to be here every week.
That's Wayne Gilman, legendary newsman. Thank you, Wayne.
Thank you.
And you are closing out the show.
I'm Kay Thompson. Join us again for Kay Thompson Live every Wednesday at 8 o'clock from 8 to 9. Please join us. It's been nice. Nice.
All right. Thank you, everybody, once again. Have a good weekend. Good evening. Take care. Bye-bye.